Welcome to the No Meh Movies Podcast. How many times have you heard a movie is all right? It's average. It's just okay. If you ask your friends if you should see it and they say, meh. I'm Davey Barris, and my co-host Darren Cross is still on vacation, which means we got another bonus episode before we start season two, where I'm going to review a movie that I've seen recently, tell you my thoughts on it, and we'll have a little fun discussing it. Now, in all transparency, Darren is actually back from vacation, and we have started recording episodes for season two. We are very excited for the slate of movies that are coming your way, because they're going to be a lot of fun to talk about. But in the meantime, I wanted to keep things going with more bonus episodes, and I decided that after we did Alien Resurrection in season one, I needed to keep watching the Alien movies. So the other night, I sat down to watch Prometheus. And after it was over, realized that it's really hard to do a podcast on Prometheus now that Alien Covenant has come out. So here's what I'm going to do. This episode is going to be about Prometheus. I have not seen Alien Covenant yet. So all these thoughts are going back to the year 2012. By the way, Prometheus scores a 73% on Rotten Tomatoes and scores a 7.0 on IMDb. Puts it above a meh movie. But in these bonus episodes, this is just to talk about some fun stuff that I've been watching lately. So we're going to discuss it. So we're going to go back to the year 2012 and pretend that Alien Covenant has not come out yet, because I haven't seen it. So I'm going to give you my review as if... without that knowledge. Now, even in 2012, they knew there was going to be a sequel. So the writers, especially Damon Lindelof, in interviews was like, hey, there's a sequel coming. Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm totally planning a sequel for this. All this information, is all these answers are going to be in the sequel. And then when it actually came time to do the sequel, Lindelof actually walked away from the project. So I have a feeling that some of the things I discussed today might be answered next week when I review Alien Covenant. However, let's have some fun and let's see what we get to. So, spoiler warning for Prometheus. I'm going to be talking the whole movie and spoilers probably for the entire Alien franchise. So, just a warning. In case it's been a while since you've seen it or you've never seen it before, Prometheus is about two scientists named Elizabeth Shaw and Charlie Holloway, who discover these cave paintings that lead them to believe that an alien race created mankind. And they get the Wayland Company to fund an expedition to go out into space and try to find these planets that they found in the cave painting. And when they get there, they find out that it's not what they thought it was going to be. And the answers to the questions they had might not be as easy to discover as they think. And like all Alien franchise movies, things go bad. So I'll leave it at that as far as the synopsis. And we'll go into our first question, which we ask every week. Was I entertained? The answer is yes. Like, Ridley Scott knows how to put a movie together. John Spates, who is the first writer, and Damon Lindelof know how to create some engaging questions. So based on just the visuals and the, you know, being in outer space and knowing that this is going to tie into the Alien franchise somehow, entertaining on its own. There's enough stuff that happens in the movie. So while you're thinking about these questions, there's enough stuff going on, whether it's being attacked or, you know, some action scenes, that you stay entertained. You stay engaged with this movie. It goes pretty fast, to be honest. So definitely entertained by Prometheus. But here is the important question, and the question that is going to hinge on your view of the movie and your opinion of the movie. Did the movie do what it was supposed to do? Now, like many people back in 2012, I went into this viewing thinking this is the prequel to the Alien franchise. In marketing and in interviews, Ridley Scott and Damon Lindelof really emphasized that this is not a prequel to the Alien movie. This is a prequel that's set in that world, but it's not a direct prequel to the Alien movie. And in fact, they land on a different planet. With that in mind, this movie, I was expecting a horror movie. Because, like I said, I was expecting it to be set in the Alien franchise. This is listed as a science fiction film. We have to askew a little bit of our expectations versus what the movie was really trying to do. Did the movie do what it was supposed to do? Be a science fiction film? Yes, absolutely. The questions about our existence, the questions about religion, our, you know, where we come from, the questions that we get from David, from the android, what his purpose is. These are very science fiction-y themes and very science fiction-y questions to ask. And the movie definitely does what it's supposed to do in that regard. Now, if you were like me and you were expecting a horror movie, or if you're a giant fan of Aliens, the sequel done by Ridley Scott, and you were expecting an action movie, no. This movie did not do what it was supposed to do in that sense. I was expecting a horror movie. Like, when Ridley Scott comes back, I was expecting to be creeped out, that sense of dread that you get from the first Alien movie. There are a couple of scenes where people get attacked by different aliens, where they, in turn, then attack the crew, where people get infected with things. But was it scary? No, none of it was scary. You know, none of it... There was no edge of the seat moment. It didn't carry that same weight, that same dread that the first Alien movie did. And even the subsequent Alien movies were able to carry some kind of dread because they kind of found new ways for the aliens to attack. Now, you know, this leads me into one of the main things I was thinking as I was watching this movie is that when you go back and do a prequel for a movie that's known for being this intense, that's known for being this great horror and then later an action kind of mashup. And when you go back into a prequel, we know what's going to happen. We know how the aliens attack. We know that their blood is acid. And it robs a lot of the tension out of the movie. So there's two characters, Fifield and Milburn, and you know they're the sort of the first ones to get attacked. And in any other movie, that scene would be filled with dread. There's a worm type of thing. It rises up and then latches onto them, and then they try to cut it. It sprays acid, but then regrows. Normally, that kind of scene would be like your first big kill, your first big scare. But we already know kind of how aliens work in this world, and it just robs all that dread, all that drama out of the scene. If you're trying to come up with new ways to kill people, you know, from alien attacks, you know, a lot of times movies will go bigger. We see this in the Star Wars franchise, right? When they try to do prequels, they went bigger with some things. And then when you sit down and watch the original Star Wars trilogy, you're like, well, where were all those things? How did the ships become less advanced? You know, how did the, you know, all this great lightsaber fighting we saw, and then we get Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader basically poking each other with sticks. So, you know, how does everything digress as we get into that original movie? So that's something you don't want to do, right? So you don't want the alien attacks to be bigger and grander, but at the same time, you need to come up with a way to scare us. I feel like the movie didn't really do what it was supposed to do in that regard. But, you know, that's what they say that's not what they were trying to do. They say they were trying to do a sci-fi movie that asked big questions. And in that sense, it did do what it was supposed to do. All right, what about these actors? What about this cast? We've got Naomi Rapace as Elizabeth Shaw, sort of our lead, our heroine. We've got Logan Marshall Green as Charlie Holloway, her lover and fellow scientist. And really, you know, seem to be partners throughout this whole thing. We got Michael Fassbender, who, it's no secret, is our android David. Charlize Theron, who plays Vickers, sort of the head of the expedition. We got Idris Elba, who plays Janik, the captain of the ship. So we got a pretty strong cast here. And, you know, we normally shout out our top performers in this segment. And I think anybody who sees this movie is going to say their top performer is Michael Fassbender. people have talked to death about his performance as David the Android. It is fantastic. I can watch a whole movie of the things David was doing in the 2 years while everybody was asleep and the ship was in flight. Just that alone was entertaining and engaging. And it's interesting that the things that he kind of studied leading into this, so he very much studied the replicants in Ridley Scott's Blade Runner. He also studied HAL 9000 from 2001 A Space Odyssey. He said the funny walk and economy of movement of Olympic diver Greg Louganis. Studied David Bowie, Peter O'Toole, and Lawrence of Arabia, which plays a part in the movie, which I will definitely get to. So yeah, so Fassbender brought it for this. He definitely brought it. And you could hear a lot of people talk about him and his performance. So I'm going to give my top performer, Naomi Rapace. So Elizabeth Shaw, they wanted her to be different than Ripley from the original movies, right? Ripley is one of the greatest heroines of all time. She's one of the greatest action horror stars of all time. And they wanted this character to be different. They just didn't want her to be kicking alien butt. They wanted her to come at it with more of a scientific approach. And she's very questioning of everything going on. She's very questioning of what they call the engineers, the people that they think created mankind. And I think she did a really good job of leading us through the adventures that the Prometheus crew goes on. She also has, if anything reaches the level of horror, it's her scene. And I'll get to it in a second, but her acting throughout that scene is incredibly exhilarating, incredibly dynamic, and it makes a scene work. Like, if she gives a poor performance there, the scene comes off really bad. But she brings it. She really brings the dread and the horror that she's feeling in that scene. So I think I'm going to give her my top performer for this week. We might as well jump into successes and failures. Where does the movie succeed? Where does it fail? I know it's not a meh movie, but it's still got successes and failures. And if you see how much this movie is talked about, you'll understand that it's got some failures. It's got some successes. So I got to say, my first success is just the opening scenery. Like, it is incredible the shots they got. I think they were in Scotland and Ireland and getting some great, like, these lakes and mountains, and it's incredible. Like, do they give helicopter tours for the opening of Prometheus? I would pay for that. Now, Ridley Scott, he knows how to shoot some scenery. He knows how to really set an atmosphere and set what a world is going to look like. And he nails it right off the bat in this movie. A fail for me, and I mentioned it a few minutes ago, is when David is alone on the ship, and while they're all asleep, he does some things. He watches their dreams, which seems like an interesting thing. They're surprised later that he was watching their dreams, but if the technology exists, why are they surprised? Like, why put that technology in there? I thought David was supposed to be monitoring them to make sure that they're, like, sleeping okay. I thought that was an actual function that he was supposed to be doing, but it turns out it was an invasion of privacy. But why would you get in a machine that's capable of reading your dreams if you don't feel comfortable with them reading your dreams? Like, that seemed a little weird. But he does some other fun things. He plays basketball while riding a bike, and he kind of makes like a hook shot, which I think is a throwback to Alien Resurrection when Ridley makes the over-the-shoulder shot. Why else would they have a basketball court on the ship other than a nod to that? I'm curious if Michael Fassbender learned how to spin the basketball on his finger. I wasn't able to find that. If anybody knows, tweet at me if Fassbender is actually a Harlem Globetrotter. But then he sits down and he watches the movie Lawrence of Arabia. And he not only watches the movie Lawrence of Arabia, he dyes his hair and combs it to look like Peter O'Toole in Lawrence of Arabia. And I'm pretty sure he even quotes Lawrence of Arabia once or twice throughout the movie. And it got my brain going. Because I actually watched Lawrence of Arabia for the first time probably within the last 18 months. And, you know, it's a very impactful movie and there's a lot to think about. And I was like, okay, this movie has to be saying something. Like, why would they set that up if this movie's not trying to say something about David, you know, and his desire to be like Lawrence of Arabia. In doing some reading about T.E. Lawrence, the actual person, and then kind of how he's been depicted in, you know, in the movies, in stories, he's a strange guy. And, you know, obviously in the movie, his goal becomes to unite the Arab tribes to fight back and to kind of claim their independence. He ultimately, spoiler warning for Lawrence of Arabia, big spoiler warning here if you haven't seen a very old movie, he ultimately fails in that mission and is kind of really distraught by that. The whole war and the whole campaign of World War I does a lot of psychological damage to him. Seeing all the death and destruction does damage to him. But he's also someone that like pushes himself. He rides across the desert when people tell him that he can't ride across the desert. He inhabits the Arab culture to the point where he doesn't even wear his soldier uniform anymore. He wears the robes that the Arabs wear. And there's also a lot of things in his life and some stuff in the movie about him being insecure with his homosexuality and whether he was or not. And if you read more into his life, that's a major theme. So there's a lot of things about T.E. Lawrence. And when David builds his whole persona around this, I think, does it mean something, right? I don't think it does. I can't find anything in this movie that links David's behavior to T.E. Lawrence of Arabia. Uniting people. He doesn't try to unite the engineers and the humans. He definitely doesn't do that. In fact, if anything, he tries to divide them. He's not seeking adventure for the sake of seeking adventure, for the rush of it. He's not, you know, the things about the homosexual tendencies, nothing. There's nothing there really in the movie. I don't understand. Is it just they thought it'd be cool for Fassbender? Like, I get that Fassbender wanted to do it for his character, right? He wanted to act a little bit like Lawrence of Arabia in his character, in his mannerisms. But to show us that scene and to like mention it and multiple times, and I can't remember if he quoted it or not, it feels like it's trying to say something, and I can't figure out what. So that's a fail for me. I really wanted to connect the dots on that one. If you've connected the dots, if you see it, tweet at me at No Meh Movies and fill me in, because I'd love to talk about it more and figure it out. All right, another fail for me is got to be the foreshadowing that this movie does. The foreshadowing is very heavy-handed. Like, in the beginning of the movie, they get invited to the captain's chambers, right, to Vickers' chambers. And this is Shaw and Holloway, our two scientists. And Amelia's like, wow, this place is so cool. Who knew you had an entire escape pod? And she's like, yeah, it's totally stocked with food and can survive for a couple years on its own. Wink, wink. And then Shaw goes into the back room and is like, whoa, you have a medical pod. These things are so cool. And starts like hitting buttons on it. She clearly knows how it works. And I'm sitting there going, my God, are you foreshadowing this hard? Like, okay, when's it going to come back around? Where's it going to go? So, you know, huge foreshadowing kind of fail there. And then they also do it with Shaw's backstory. Like, they tell us things at the very last moment that we needed to know for like a scene or two later. And the most egregious one is the fact that she can't get pregnant. And Holloway says something about creating life, like, how cool would it be to create life? And she just shoots him these daggers, and she's like, you know I can't do that. You know I can't have a child. Okay. Then what happens, like, two scenes later? She gets an alien implanted in her body, basically, and David tells her that she's pregnant. Not only that, she's 3 months pregnant. And it's like, oh, my God, movie, like, I blame the writers on this one, that they didn't find a more organic way to weave that in. However, that does lead to my success, because like I mentioned, the scene where she decides, I cannot have this alien inside of me, This is one time where actually being a prequel helped the horror, the dread, because we as viewers know that if you get an alien inside your stomach, it's coming out as a chest burster. And so there was definitely a clock ticking there. We knew if she didn't get that thing out, it's not just going to be a, you know, a pleasant birth, you know. They're not going to get a midwife to, you know, lay her down in a bath and have this nice, comfortable birth. This thing is busting out of her stomach. It is going to be gruesome, and she's going to die. So this is the one time where it works. So she jumps into the surgery pod. Of course she jumps into the surgery pod and starts hitting all these buttons, and it's not programmed for women, which is an interesting thing that leads into a whole nother theory on the movie, or at least for the female anatomy to do surgery. So she has the thing on her feet, come up with a different kind of surgery. It cuts her open. I have no, was she, did it not have anesthetic? Could it not knock her out for the surgery, or at least numb her? Like, they did a local, like, something. It sprayed something across her belly where it made the cut. But she's also injecting herself with stuff, and I gotta think that's gotta be some kind of antibiotic cocktail to help her heal and to prevent infection. It happens way too fast for them to explain any of it, but you know what? I was okay with it. The fact that she kept injecting herself in the leg with something, I assumed this is whatever medicine she needs was in those shots. And the thing performs surgery as her stomach is kind of convulsing and she's dripping with sweat and she's cut open. It reaches in and pulls out what's in her stomach. And we find out that it's some kind of tentacle alien thing. We don't really know what it is. It doesn't look like a traditional chest burster. And so we don't really know what it is. It's got these tentacles that's kind of trying to grab her. It's spraying blood and stuff everywhere and goo everywhere. She's covered in it. Incredible scene. Absolutely incredible scene. The practical effects, the dread, her acting, the clock that's ticking, everything about it comes together perfectly. So big success there for the whole surgery scene. And it comes back later. Of course it does, because this movie foreshadows almost everything. I got a few more things to throw into successes and failures. One question I had, they seem to jump to a lot of conclusions in this movie, and it really bothered me. Like, they're supposed to be scientists, and they basically spend, what, like maybe 2 days, if that? On this planet, and they decide that these engineers are actually evil and that they're going to destroy Earth if they can get to Earth, that it's some kind of warship. Jumping to massive conclusions there. You know, Idris Elba's character is like, oh, this is military. This is a military installation. And I'm like, have you really done enough investigating? Like, he hasn't even left the ship yet. Have you done enough investigating to really know what's going on this planet? And with these engineers, as you call them, the movie is so interested in telling its story about engineers and creation and how the humans are created that they just skip right over some of this stuff for the actual plot of the movie. Then the engineers, when it's finally time to give us some answers, right? We finally find one engineer that's still alive. He's asleep in a pod. And we can finally figure out anything. We can find out anything. No. The alien just attacks all the humans and then tries to pilot his vessel and leave the planet to go apparently attack Earth. It's still not confirmed that he was going to Earth. Like, yeah, he saw a hologram that showed the planet Earth, but we don't know where that guy was going. He could have been going back to his home planet. And they leap to such a conclusion that they crashed their ship into it. They crashed the Prometheus vessel to knock it out of the sky, sacrificing themselves. It's a lot of jumping to conclusions, and I don't understand why. Give me more movie and tell me why. Tell me why the engineers were definitely going to attack humans, definitely trying to wipe out humans. Tell me why the engineer wouldn't take a second to figure out how the heck these people ended up on his ship. So yeah, lots of jumping to conclusions, especially in the third act of this movie. All right, the big question, the question I've been thinking a lot about before I record this, is the questions about religion, faith, and God, and really the story of Prometheus. So the myth of Prometheus is he's the Titan in the Greek mythology that brought fire to the humans, against Zeus's orders. He's punished by Zeus for this for eternity. Eventually, he's rescued by Hercules, but the point is that he is known as one of the creators of human, right? He molded them out of clay. So clearly, by naming the movie Prometheus, by naming the ship Prometheus, this movie is talking a lot about how humans are created. And what the movie seems to say is that the engineers, we are created in their image. Just like you've heard a lot that we're created in God's image. I'm sure you've heard that before. In the opening scene, it seems like one of the engineers drinks the black goo that causes all sorts of problems throughout this movie. And then it like disintegrates him. He falls in the water and his DNA gets deconstructed and then reconstructed. You know, they say that we came from the water, that we came from the oceans, right? That's how life started. So you can see how Ridley Scott would want to do this, right? This is, you know, where our DNA comes from. The only answer the movie has for this, because the whole goal of the movie is the search for these answers. And the only answer the movie has is from David. And his storyline is very much tied into our human storyline because while we are looking for our creators, David is literally traveling with his creators. Humans made him. Peter Whalen made him, and he's asleep on the ship. And in a conversation with Holloway, which is probably one of the key conversations, he asks Holloway, you know, why he was created. Holloway says, because we could. And he says, how disappointed would you be to meet your makers and that be the answer? Something to that effect. I think the movie is trying to say that we should stop asking why. Like, we're created. That's the only thing that's important. Like, give up on the question of why. Because there are no answers. There's never going to be an answer for it. However, I don't know if David's the best one to deliver this message because androids are created for a reason, for a purpose, to do the jobs that we can't do. In today's society, we've created AI to, you know, solve the math that we can't compute and to process things at speeds we can't process them at, right? Like, we use AI as a tool. It's been created as a tool. David on this ship is a tool. He monitors the ship while they're all asleep. He provides medical care. He provides engineering. He provides communication in some aspects. Like, he's clearly a tool of the vessel. That's why he was created. We didn't just create David because we could. We created him because we needed him. We had a purpose for him. So, what was the engineer's purpose for creating us? And if they were truly this mad at us, that they wanted to come wipe us out with their black goo and their pods, what were they mad at us for? Like, these are two huge questions that the movie is like, you'll find out in the sequel. Like, come on. You can't wait this long to do a sequel to Aliens, make it all about these big questions, and not have at least the path of an answer, you know, leading to an answer, the hint of an answer. If we created the androids as a tool for us, then clearly the engineers created humans with a purpose in mind, right? We were supposed to do something for them. It's actually not even clear what that first engineer was doing. It looked like he wasn't expecting his body to disintegrate. It looked like he was expecting something else to happen. Like, it almost makes me feel like we were created by an accident. And if that's the case, well, that says something completely else about faith and religion. A lot of things on this planet are probably coincidence and accident. I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of unexplained stuff in this world. The one interesting thing is that the one person that has faith in God is the one person that survives to the end of this movie, and that's Shaw. We get flashbacks with her father. He's seems to be some kind of preacher on a mission of some kind, helping, you know, remote people on this planet. And, you know, she asks him a big question about why he has faith, and he says, because that's what I choose to believe. And so that's all that's like her thing in life. That's her motto. That's her mantra. You know, she chooses to believe. No matter what answers they find, she's always going to choose to believe. And David said, you got your answer. The engineers created you. And she goes, yeah, but who created them? She always believes there's something greater. There's some greater power out there. And the movie clearly thinks that's important because she's the one that survives. Now, I think that's a strange message. You know, in this search for answers, the fact that you're never going to get any answers. I mean, it's basically what the movie's telling you. But it's okay. It's okay you don't get any answers. Have faith that it's all happening for a reason or there's a greater purpose to it all. It's a strange message in, you know, in science fiction. It's so much about the search for answers. This movie is basically telling you to stop it, to stop worrying about those answers and to just have faith. Sorry, that's not as much fun. And the hardest part about science fiction, the hardest part about writing science fiction is the answers. We see it all the time. And we see it. Damon Lindelof struggles with it. I mean, Lost is the greatest example of this, where there were so many cool questions and the answers were nowhere to be found. And Prometheus puts itself in the exact same situation. There are so many cool questions and just no answers to be found. That's my feelings on successes and failures. That was a lot. I know it. We'll move on. We'll take a quick peek at what the Rotten Tomatoes reviewer said, because I'm very curious to see what the critical response was to this. So we'll start with the Rotten reviews this week. This is from David Thompson from the New Republic. He said, Prometheus is scary only in the sum of instincts and talent for movie making that have been lost. This seems like a shot at Ridley Scott, to be honest. And I completely disagree with this. This movie might have a lot of questions to answer for, but as far as like cinematically going, Ridley Scott can still bring it. And I don't think any talent or instincts have been lost here. I think that he's backed himself into a corner by making a prequel to an existing franchise that, you know, requires him to come up with some kind of answers to things. And I think from watching the trailer for Alien Covenant and hearing some things, I think there is a pivot in the franchise to maybe answer some of these questions. And I think we'll have that conversation next week, but definitely have not lost any talent for movie making from Ridley Scott. Let's see, what else do we got in our Rotten reviews? So this is from Christopher Orr from The Atlantic. He says, Prometheus, like in its telling, the human race itself is a creation spliced from the DNA of superior forebearers. Now, there is absolutely no denying that Alien and Aliens are two of the greatest sci-fi horror action movies ever made. So yes, it has superior forebearers, just like the Titans of Greek mythology. But again, I think anybody who gives this a rotten review based on that is not taking into account the fact that Ridley Scott and Damon Lindelof were trying to do something different and they were setting it in the world of Alien. Again, you have to remember, if you've never seen this movie before, remember one thing, it is not a direct prequel to Alien. It is a prequel in the timeline set in the Alien world. I mean, he's right. It has superior forebearers. Did Prometheus make it to the level of Alien? No, it didn't. I'm going to tell you right now, before I even tell you if I thought the movie was good or bad overall, it didn't reach the heights of Alien. But does that make it rotten? That's a stretch. In the world of franchises today, just keep telling interesting stories. We know nothing will ever create the feelings that the original movie created in you. Whether that's Alien, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Star Trek, you name it, the original is always going to make you feel something special. And the sequels are always going to have a little bit of a letdown factor because it'll never reach that emotional level. Even if critically it's a better movie like Empire Strikes Back is. You know, things you felt in the first Star Wars are levels that the other movies they'll never reach. It's the same thing with the Alien franchise. No matter how many movies they make, it'll never be Alien again. All right, let's check out some of the fresh reviews. Richard Roper from richardroper.com. Well, that's easy. His fresh review, and remember, this is just what Rotten Tomatoes tells me. Brilliant, epic, haunting, grotesque, great. Okay, we have a collection of words there. Brilliant? Yes, I agree. Epic? Yeah, I agree. Haunting? No, I disagree. Grotesque? No. Not compared to what this franchise has brought us already. No. Great? You'll find out in a segment or two. And our last fresh review, Lisa Kennedy from the Denver Post says, much like Rutger Hauer's turn as a replicant in Scott's Blade Runner, Fassbender's performance may launch Prometheus into the cult stratosphere. I will agree with Lisa with a caveat. And that's what I've been saying all along. I have not seen Alien Covenant yet, and I know Fassbender is back for that one. Up until this point, I'm going to agree with her. Like, I think in years from now, we will continue to deconstruct Prometheus and especially Fassbender's performance, and new things will kind of be discovered and unraveled about it. I completely agree with that. What Fassbender did was fabulous. I think whether this is going to make it into the cult stratosphere, these two movies are too linked. Like, Alien Covenant is a direct sequel to Prometheus. So whether this movie is going to reach cult status depends on what Alien Covenant delivers. So we will find out next week, but I definitely agree with Lisa here. Fassbender, like Rucker Hauer, their performance alone could put it into that cult stratosphere. All right. It is time for me to pitch a sequel. Now, without obviously knowing what's about to happen next week, when I sit down and watch that other movie, what's something that I would have liked to seen done with this cast, story? So instead of pitching a sequel, I'm pitching a prequel this week. I'm going to do a prequel on a prequel. I'm doubling down. And that's because there are three characters that we need to see a little more of and we need to learn a little more about. And that's Idris Elba, the captain of our ship, Janik, and his two co-pilots, Benedict Wong, who played Ravel, and I believe M.M. Elliott, as Chance, was the other pilot, I believe. The three of them have clearly been running this ship for a while, and I want to know what kind of adventures these three have gotten into. Clearly, Idris Elba has seen some stuff. He's been around. This guy seems like a veteran, maybe military background. I'm not sure. Clearly a fan of the accordion and Steven Stills. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I want to see the adventures that these three were on, that they were definitely ready to sacrifice themselves to protect the human race. Like, that's a big step for characters to make. And only characters that have truly gone, like, down the hero's journey can make a bold move like that. And so I want to see the hero's journey that these three have been on that have led them to this moment where they will defend the human race with their lives. So that's what I'm pitching as a prequel, Space Adventures with Idris Elba and Benedict Wong and M.M. Elliott. So there you go. What the story would be, that's for your imaginations. I'll keep thinking about it. Who knows what those guys could have gotten up to. All right, I got a few quick picks to go out because I didn't see this in theaters. I watched it on my laptop. So I was able to take notes, and I got some good quick picks this week. What's up with Fifield and Milburn? What is up with these two characters? Fifield has like a tantrum over seeing a dead body, and then the whole reason he's there is because he's got these magic space balls that map the whole facility. Apparently, he's a geologist. He's really into rocks, maybe. But he leaves without his pups, without his mapping balls, and then gets lost, even though he's got all the GPS information and the mapping balls are connected to his suit. And I think they were trying to go back to the original movie where we had the two ship engineers. You know, they were a little bit of the comedic relief, and I think that's what Fifield and Milburn were supposed to be. I wasn't laughing at him. I don't know if any of you laughed at him, but I definitely was not laughing at him. So that's a big nitpick for me. Like, if you're going to give me two dumb, bumbling comedy characters, make them funny. Just don't make them bumbling. All right, here's a big nitpick for me. Throughout the movie, we see these green holograms that play throughout the alien ship, the caves? Are the whole cave systems the alien ship, or just part of the cave systems the alien ship? Anyways, these holograms play throughout, and then David finds the bridge of the ship, and a huge hologram is activated and plays for him there. It shows like the memories of things that had happened on the ship. What is playing those holograms? There does not seem to be any tech in the lining of those walls. I cannot figure it out. Like when the space balls are when the space balls are flying through the ship and mapping it, like, okay, they're generating these red light and doing an infrared scan of everything, and fine, we understand where that's coming from. There's no like path of light. There's nothing activating on the walls. These holograms are just flying through space. Even if the wall lit up a little bit as the hologram went past, I would say, okay, these are magical spaceship walls that can play holograms. Even in the beginning of the movie, when they're in the hangar of their ship and they're doing their debriefing and they watch this big holographic video of Wayland, and then the scientists put up their research, there are devices in the floor and the walls that are clearly displaying that hologram. You can't just have holograms appear. They're not force ghosts. There needs to be a reason for them existing. That's all I'm saying. Could have been easily solved. Instead, it ends up in quick picks. All right, I got a few more for you. Did they not have showers on the ship? Twice our main characters basically bathe themselves in the sink. Which is strange. Like, I get when Holloway wakes up in the morning and washes his face, but he washes his whole upper body, basically. But Sean is the real one. Like, she's covered in blood and guts. You're not going to wash your entire body in the sink. I don't know. That was a strange one. One of the things I said before about being a prequel is you got to be careful about the advancement of technology. And I'm pretty sure in the original Alien and Aliens, they had guns. Like, they were shooting bullets. In this movie, I'm pretty sure, besides the flamethrowers, which is clearly tied into the Prometheus story, why there's so many flamethrowers, right, giving fire to humans, I'm pretty sure they're shooting bolts, like some kind of laser bolt, especially when zombie Fifield comes back and attacks the ship. He's been infected by the goo. I'm pretty sure they're shooting, like, laser bolts at him. And then I'm pretty sure, like, years later, in Aliens, they're shooting bullets out of guns. It's a paradox that you get into when you do a prequel. You have to pay attention to this. The technology doesn't degrade over time. It probably gets better over time. My final quick pick, my final nitpick, is that the final scene of the movie. The engineer, okay, this is the biggest spoiler of all. I'm going to spoil the end of the movie for you right now. The engineer is attacking Shaw after his ship's been downed, and she opens the door and releases the chest burster, which is now a face sucker, and it sucks in the engineer and impregnates it and wraps it up and sits on it. And then we cut back after Shaw and David make their escape. We cut back and he's convulsing, the engineer is convulsing, and out from his stomach bursts an alien. The first xenomorph. I don't have a problem with the origin. Like, if you're saying some combination of our DNA and the engineer's DNA and the face sucker's DNA have created the xenomorphs, fine. It was the character design that I was let down by. Like, the alien character design, the xenomorph character design, is one of the coolest things in sci-fi history. And this scene, like, it was clearly someone with a very feminine body slithering around on the floor in black latex with, you know, a headpiece on. Maybe they made it human-like because they wanted to show, like, the evolution of the xenomorph. Like, this is how they started, being very similar to us and evolved over time. It was too human-like. And I was like, okay, this is clearly a person in a latex suit. Like, this is not a creature design. And so, yeah. I'm going to give a nitpick there, you know? I thought they could have brought it harder for that last shot, for that last scene. That's all I got. A little trivia going out this week. This is interesting. Composer Mark Streitenfeld had the orchestra play his compositions backwards, and then digitally reverse the compositions to play forwards for the final film. So it's an orchestra playing backwards, played forward. This made the music sound unusual and unsettling, which he felt was right for the film. I have never heard of that being done before. That is very cool. This is something that'll lead us into next week, and it'll be my last piece of trivia. Ridley Scott decided against featuring the original Xenomorph in the film. He says the sequel squeezed him dry, he did very well, and no way am I going back there. Instead, this being an indirect prequel to Alien, he decided to feature a Xenomorph ancestor slash parent. Now, here's where it leads us into next week. However, criticism from fans who complained about the absence of the famous creature after the film's release made Scott change his mind and include the creature in the sequel Alien Covenant. So, apparently, I am going to get to see a Xenomorph when I sit down to watch this for next week. All right. It is time for my final decision. Prometheus, is it a good movie or is it a bad movie? And I've got to tell you that right now, where I sit, having no answers to some of my biggest questions, and knowing that Alien Covenant is on the horizon, I am going to call Prometheus a bad movie. Now, I absolutely, like I said, was entertained. And I think some of the performances, I think some of the technical things they did were excellent. Especially some of the performances were excellent. However, these themes that they're trying to create just go so unanswered or so vague. Or sometimes aren't even explored at all. Like with the Lawrence of Arabia thing. That I can't help but say it's a bad movie. Like, I like a movie that makes me think, but this movie doesn't give me any thoughts of its own to ponder. Like, yeah, I'm left with a lot of things that I think. Yeah, I got to reflect on my own views on religion or faith or Lawrence of Arabia, but I didn't get anything from the movie of what they thought about these things. They just wanted to set up questions. Now, I may come back. I may come back after Alien Covenant and have completely different views on this, and I'm really excited to do this kind of two-part podcast for you. As it stands right now, I enjoyed Prometheus. I think you will enjoy it if you've never seen it before. However, I can't call it a good movie. I gotta say, it falls under a bad movie for me. That does it for this week. Like I said, we'll be back next week with a bonus episode to keep you going until we're ready for season 2. Me and Darren are watching movies. We're recording. We're getting new episodes ready for you. We'll be back in a few more weeks. So hang in there with us. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show on whatever podcasting app you're listening on. You can follow us on Twitter at No Meh Movies. You can follow me on Twitter at Davey Barris. Thanks again, and the next time your friends ask about a movie, take a stance and tell them if the movie is good or bad. Because on this show, there were no meh movies.